Commanders entering Cincinnati, hoping to wreck their hopes of reviving their season. Bengals 0-2. Commanders 1-1 heading into their week 3 matchup on Monday Night Football. It's a burgundy and gold game day here on the Hoffman Show on the Team 980. And just after 6 o'clock, right before a game, normally we do this on Fridays, but Monday Night Football edition of the Pick 6.
The 6 biggest Commander storylines.
It is caught!
Delivered at 6 o'clock sharp. It's the Pick 6 at 6.
We set out to find a leader, someone who could take this franchise to the next level, build an elite team that consistently competes for championships.
All right, this is how it goes. The prediction version of the Pick 6. We pick 6 players who we are most intrigued to watch in the game that we think might just help the Commanders get to a win. We have opened it up this season, so if there's any Bengals that we think are relevant to the conversation that we think may be stopping them. Last week, for instance, I said Dexter Lawrence, which turned out pretty well. They contained Lawrence, and lo and behold, Anthony, they won the football game. So who you got? You're up first this week. You got number one, vamos.
Number one.
Number one, baby, I'm going with Sam Cosmi.
Oh, some love for the big fella. Why you got Sam Cosmi number one?
So for the fact that BJ Hill and DJ Reader are both going to be likely out for today's game, I think we got to take advantage of not
Sheldon
having
Sheldon Rankins. You mean?
Oh, Sheldon Rankins.
BJ Hill. Yeah.
Not having those two guys up front on the defensive side of the ball for the Bengals. So I think running behind our I guess he's not an all pro, but I think he can eventually
he's their
get
best.
There. Yeah, he's our best guard. Running behind him, I think it's probably going to be in our best interest. So I'm going with Sam Cosmi as number one. I think we rely heavily on the run today, and he's going to be the leader.
I think it's a good call. Yeah, Rankins out, BJ Hill doubtful. So we'll see what they can do inside. I'm gonna be. Same path, slightly less. I don't know. It's direct. Go ahead and let's go number two.
Number two,
Brian Robinson Jr. I think is a really, really terrific running back. I think tonight we get to find out just how great he is. He's going to have opportunities because of what you said. They got these two defensive tackles that are out. Biotis and Cosmi are good. Alec Greddy can grind. Cliff has done a great job designing the run this year. And Brian Robinson has actually had a great season individually, right? Look at, stats like yards over expected or yards after contact, things that really try to measure how a running back is playing outside of the system that he's playing in, because it is a position and a task running the football as a ball carrier that is so dependent on everybody else. But if at the end of the day, like if you go out and have 150 yards, the offensive line, they'll get, I'll give credit to his offensive line, is Brian Robinson has 150 yards. We know who gets the love at the end of the day, the guy who puts up the stats in fantasy, which just reminded me, Anthony, I actually do need a decent night for Brian Robinson in fantasy. That's not why I'm picking him, but it's Monday Night Football. You're on a national audience. I don't think a lot of people realize, like, this kid's really, really good. And this could be, you know, we talk about a coming out party for Jaden or, you know, whoever else on Monday night. I think this could be the Brian Robinson coming out party. If the Commanders are going to win, it kind of needs to be the Brian Robinson coming out party. And if they lose, and like no one knows his name by the end of the night, they don't have a chance of winning. And that could happen, by the way, because of the score. If Cincinnati goes out and has a big first quarter and hits a couple of big explosives, then, well, now you're chasing the game. You're getting away from your game plan, et cetera. You're passing the ball more. And even then, he's still probably a factor, but not nearly as big of one if you have to start, you know, chucking the ball down the field. So Brian Robinson, for a million reasons, both as a symptom and a cause, if you will, needs to be a big part of what they do tonight. Brian Robinson is number two, my number one choice in our Pick 6.
Number three.
Number three, Craig, I'm going to go with Javonte Jean-Baptiste. Over the weekend, we found out Cleveland Farrell, he was going to be out for tonight's game against the Bengals. So who would possibly be filling in for him? And I think John Kime, he was the one to ask whether or not Cleveland being out, we'll see more of Jamin Davis. And he didn't really say too much about Jamin Davis. He pivoted right to Gervonta Jean-Baptiste and talking about Johnny Newton as well, as guys that are, you know, slowly but surely getting their feet. So I think tonight I'm definitely going to be looking at him. Granted, he's going to be in a rotation with Dante Fowler, Dorns, and all the other edges. But I'm excited to see with this opportunity how much playing time they allow this guy to, you know, go out there and affect the game.
Yeah, I mean, Dan Quinn did say, like, Fowler's the guy that probably gets the biggest boost. Like, mm-hmm. I would assume Fowler's starting. But, like, Fowler's a smaller guy, relatively speaking. He's, you know, bigger compared to us. We're just mere mortals. He's an NFL football player. But he's not a 290-pound edge. Javante Jean-Baptiste is a big dude. He is more of that, like, first and second down body type. So mm-hmm. does he get some more reps in those situations? Can he set a hard edge? Can he, you know, contain Burrow? You know, Burrow can scramble a little bit, but, like, do what you need to do to rush in tandem with Payne and Allen. It's a great call because I do think part of what they need to do tonight is get pressure. And that involves doing your job really well as an edge to both make sure that if there's any blitzers or anybody else coming off of you, they have the right gaps available. But also, straight up, do you win your one-on-one matchups when you get the opportunities? And by the way, if you are the fourth guy on a line, you're going to get one-on-one opportunities. Can you punish them? And whether that is Jamin, whether that is Javonte, I do wonder, you know, they called Andre Jones up from the practice squad. Like, do they go with the five defensive tackles like they did last week? Mm. Do they have Andre Jones be inactive and they just called him up and congrats, bro, you get an NFL game check? Do they have Jamin inactive again? I would tend to think that they probably have Andre Jones inactive. And Jamin's the guy that's out there a little bit more and see if he can make some more plays. But I think Javonte Jean-Baptiste is a really good one. Not the guy that I'm going to pick is the most important in the defensive room, though. Number four, Anthony.
Number four.
Quan Martin. Quan Martin has two huge jobs today. One, over the top, don't get beat. If you're in single high safety mode, if you're in cover two and you got a deep half, you have to make sure that Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins and Mike Gesicki and anybody else that they send vertical has no opportunity to hit you for a big explosive play. Actually, he's kind of got three jobs. Two, I think he probably will wind up in some man-to-man situations on Gesicki. I think Chin probably takes a little bit more of that. Chin's a little bit bigger and is fine on a guy like Gesicki as a tight end. Quan, obviously, we know has the cover skills, playing some corner and playing some nickel last year and in college. But that's going to be an interesting matchup to watch. Obviously, Percy Butler, I imagine, will play a fair amount of snaps tonight as well. But then the big one for me that kind of separates Quan, on top of being the guy that when they're in base is probably the most likely to be single high, etc., is Quan is a blitzer. He's a fantastic blitzer. And he times it well. He hits the gap hard. And there are opportunities to be had against the Cincinnati O-line. And you know, you see it in the first couple of games. You know, you see New England get some really good, nice pressure. You see in one of the big moments of the game, third and five, late in that game against Cincinnati, Spagnuolo dials one up, and it is safety coming down and crashing through the line and getting Joe Burrow. And so can Quan Martin be that guy, be explosive as a blitzer, be someone who causes havoc, be someone who maybe gets a deflection and you get a turnover? Like, they're going to need that stuff if they want to legitimately compete tonight. This offense is too good for Cincinnati to think that they can defend the entire field and not give up some explosives and not, you know, give up some drives. They're going to need a turnover to flip the field and to not, you know, ensure that Cincinnati doesn't score because they no longer have the ball. And Quan Martin could be a chaos agent of the coverage variety, of the man-to-man variety, like, hey, dude, just go make a play. And, of course, as a blitzer. So I'll go Quan Martin as my second guy and number four in our pick six.
Number five.
Number five, I'm going to go with Noah Brown. I was trying to figure out which wide receiver two I necessarily wanted to lean on, whether it was going to be Diami or Noah. But I think in terms of, like, the explosive play, I think I like Noah in that that aspect. We didn't see him week one. He got caught up week two. Made some great plays down the field in the second half of the game. And I'm expecting us, yes, to run the ball, but I think capitalizing off, you know, running the ball and setting up the pass I think he's going to have some opportunities to go out there and make some big plays. So I think Noah Brown, he's my third, fifth guy in our pick six.
Yeah, I think that's probably the right choice for a wide receiver, too. I said this last week. Dan Quinn has been reluctant to say we're going to have a distinctive wide receiver, too.
Yeah.
And I get it, because I do think they're going to rotate these guys a fair amount, and they all have a little bit different usage. Like, Olamide Zaccheaus is really, really solid as a screen runner. But what I've been saying is that Noah Brown is the guy that, if he emerges as the number two receiver for this team, that's the best possible outcome, because he's the best and the most explosive of the bunch. I would prefer, like, Olamide Zaccheaus to be a more of a number three in a rotation with Diami and Luke McCaffrey, et cetera. Like, Diami Brown's a good four in the NFL. If he's your two, I don't know that that's exactly the greatest thing. I hope that he can emerge and continue to be effective. He's been great on the screens. He's really tough to bring down. But it is kind of funny, because I still think, Anthony, I was listening to something over the weekend, and I saw, like, oh, Diami Brown, deep threat. And I'm like, when will people stop saying this? When is Diami Brown, outside of one game against Tennessee with Carson Wentz, been a deep threat in the NFL?
I mean, the thing is, like, I think he's been open a couple of times. He just hasn't capitalized on those moments, though. He's had a couple of drops. And when we seen him at UNC, that's all we saw. We saw him.
Yeah, he was a good deep threat in college.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Congrats on doing it in the ACC, with all due respect. I, as a Syracuse alum, am not allowed to talk bad about the ACC because we lost to Stanford on Friday. But the point is that he has never done it in the NFL. What he has done has been really tough on some of these screens early in this year. He's been a good blocker. He's been a good special teams player. And so, yeah, I would like Noah Brown to emerge to be the number two. And then ultimately, like, Luke McCaffrey. I think he's actually the guy. You know what, Anthony? I was trying to figure out who I want to do number six. I'm putting Luke McCaffrey at number six. Give me a number six if we can.
Number six.
Luke McCaffrey has been open for some big plays this year. And for whatever reason, despite the fact that these two have been great friends all season, and Jaden Daniels and Luke have worked together quite a bit, they come in together as rookies, they have not been on the same page. He and Jaden and Terry, Jaden and Luke, I would say that their rapport doesn't seem to be as good as Jaden's with Noah Brown, with some of the balls that they've hit 2 weeks into the season. And Noah didn't even play week one. Some of the biggest catches, biggest moments of the game, he hits Noah Brown. Sometimes it'd be like that. But I also don't think that's a long-term sustainable thing. I do think that will come around. But I think Luke McCaffrey has had some opportunities, and there's no way that they haven't talked about it. You know, Cliff being like, hey, Jaden, this is what we're looking for here. Let's get this deep over route. Let's get this crosser. And also, I think Luke is good enough with the ball in his hands that they'll probably scheme up a couple touches for him as well. I think getting him going is good for this offense. And so, you know, we obviously take Jaden Daniels off the board for our pick six, because he'd be the obvious number one, as any starting quarterback would be each week. But you start looking at some of the targets, like, yeah, Terry's the easy way out. Obviously, we've talked quite a bit about getting him going. But if they can get the other guys going, which is why I think, Anthony, you say Noah, why I say Luke McCaffrey, like, that's going to open things up for McLaurin, because they have definitely doubled him and tried to take him out of game so far, defenses, through these first two. And there haven't enough instances where Jaden has punished that. I think Jaden's done a lot of stuff right. I think overall he's played well, but this is an opportunity for growth. And so I'll say Luke McCaffrey would be another sign that you're seeing that growth if he's starting to get some of these touches.
Yeah, I think that's a great call. I think also the fact that we slowly but surely saw the offense open up a little bit, where Jaden was, you know, throwing the ball a little bit more down the field. So maybe, you know, we are seeing Luke down the field now, as opposed to, you know, going to the check down or the underneath route. So, yeah, I'm excited for this game. And hopefully this is just another, you know, step in the growth and development of Jaden in terms of pushing the ball down the field.
Definitely. I mean, it's going to be tough. This defense is complicated, and we'll talk about that more next. We'll make our predictions and give you some of the biggest schematic things to watch tonight. next. That is our pick six, though. We'll see how we did tomorrow. So the Tuesday edition of the pick six, rare Tuesday edition of the pick six, but that's what Monday Night Football will do for you. Get some of your favorite segments on a different day of the week. That's tomorrow, but coming up next, again, we'll pick the game, and we're just 30 minutes away from handing it over to the Burgundy and Gold Game Day Live folks, a.k.a. Denton and Linnell. I could have just said Denton and Linnell, not got myself all in a tongue twister. But that's 30 minutes away, an hour away from kickoff of Jags-Bills here on the Team 980. We got you covered every single aspect of Monday Night Football here on the Team 980. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Had a little bit of a technical glitch there, but I think we're Anthony, can you give me a thumbs up here? Are we good to go? Are we actually on the radio here? Is this all working? All right, we're on the radio. Yep. We're on the YouTube stream. Everybody's where they're supposed to be. It's been an adventurous hour here. But hey, it's Monday Night Football. We're just gonna, Anthony, you know what we're gonna do? We're gonna make plays. That's what we're gonna do. You and I, we're gonna make plays. Because sometimes that's what it takes. You have to overcome the adversity. Whatever's thrown at you, you just gotta roll. This is actually me just pumping Anthony back up right now because he's had a stressful 5 minutes. That's all right, though. All right, so here's what we got. We need the biggest keys to the game, and we need a prediction. I will go first. The biggest key to the game for Washington is to not win, but thoroughly dominate the time of possession tonight. In order to do that, there's going to be some other things that happen, right? It's not just like, oh, well, let's sit on the football and not go anywhere and then hope that they sit on the ball for less. And, you know, we get our three and outs with running the football to nowhere and they get theirs with incompletions. And so we dominate time of possession. No, if you dominate time of possession, it means you are efficient offensively. It means you're not facing a ton of third downs. And if you are, they're third and short and you're converting them, and that you're running the football, that you are not turning the football over, that you're maximizing your possessions, that all those things are happening. And then ultimately, hopefully they're scoring at the end of it. But I think if they want to give themselves a shot to be in this, they're going to have to take advantage of the fact that Washington up through the middle is at full strength and Cincinnati is not. That Cincinnati on the defensive line is missing their top two defensive tackles, and they've already they've struggled stopping the run already this year, and Washington, that has been their strength. So to me, Anthony, that is the key for Washington, whether it's enough or not, TBD. I'll give my prediction after we give some more keys. But yeah, that to me is the number one thing tonight. The strategic play for Washington is run the football up the gut. Use that. It's some play action, and also, you know, to counter off of it. Can Jaden Daniels pull a couple and get some big plays on the outside? Continually convert first downs and ultimately hold on to the football for a large portion of this game.
Yeah, I love that key. Definitely just, you know, keeping the ball away from Joe Burrow. But I think I want to also add, we got to score points. Field goals are not going to get the job done today. So I think executing scoring when we're in the red zone, I think it's going to be instrumental for us to, you know, go out here and get a win. We're not facing Daniel Jones. We're not facing the Giants. We're going against Joe Burrow, who has time and time again found ways to win and just ultimately just put up points on the board. So I would say the biggest thing is executing, not getting behind on the chains, because we saw what that did to our offense the first 2 weeks, you know, getting behind on the chain. So I would just say executing, converting in the red zone, and not leaning on field goals to win games.
Yeah, I think the other part of kind of the way that you achieve those things is, especially what I was talking about with time of possession, mm-hmm. is the risk is that you do what you just talked about, right? The risk is that, oh, hey, cool, we move the ball between the 20s and then we can't score in the red zone, which is exactly what happened last week. And to get around that, it's like, okay, well, let's score from farther out. Let's get some big explosive plays. Let's get Terry down the field. Let's get Noah Brown down the field. Let's get Diami down the field. Let's see if we can get a run that actually goes to the house instead of getting caught at the 20-yard line. Like, those are the kinds of things that would need to happen in order to avoid having to deal with executing in the red zone where it's harder. But the other thing about, you know, kind of running the football, being good down and distance, trying to be efficient, is it keeps you out, or if you can stay out of those third and long situations, then you don't put too much on Jaden and you don't give Lou Anarumo chances to dial up pressure. Because ultimately, like, Anaromo is one of the better, he's one of the better blitz schemers in the entire NFL. And he is a guy that has a really well-coached unit. These guys aren't going to blow assignments. They're going to be on top of what they're supposed to be on top of. And so you're going to have to earn it. You're going to have to go out and make plays. You're going to have to create, you're going to have to create your own opportunities. And in doing so, like, they're trying to get you backed up. They're trying to get you in third and long where they can create opportunities for themselves to get a pick, to get a turnover, to confuse you, to light you up, to heat you up as a quarterback. And I just don't want Jaden in those situations because that's where he struggled a little bit more against Tampa. Tampa confused him because Todd Bowles is great. And Anaromo, I don't know if he's Todd Bowles, but he's pretty darn close. I don't, you know, he certainly doesn't have the horses that Todd Bowles had, in that week one matchup, but, they've got some really good players on that defensive side. And, you know, if Trey Hendrickson gets a chance to pin his ears back and go, like, he can get you a sack or a strip sack and, you know, Jaden Daniels hasn't turned the football over this year. It's how they've been able to stay competitive when they stay competitive. But we saw what happened against Tampa. They weren't competitive. And so, ultimately, I think that is one of the biggest keys for Washington tonight is not only does it help you dominate time of possession, et cetera, but it keeps you out of those situations where Anaromo can do the more complex stuff, can confuse Jaden, bait him into a pick, you know, have him sit back there not knowing where to go with the football, and you get the strip sack, and, you know, unlike against Tampa, maybe you don't fall on it, et cetera, et cetera. Ultimately, then you get to how do I think this game is going to play out versus – how I hope it plays out for Washington. And let's just say as great as the upsets have been this weekend, I do understand why Washington is one of the biggest upsets or one of the biggest dogs of the weekend. They're 7-point dog. It was 7.5, so the number has come back a little bit Washington's way. But at the end of the day, like, the Commanders have not shown that they can prevent explosive plays. I expect Cincinnati to be really selective with when they try to utilize some of the ways Washington has been susceptible to that. Like, Cincinnati's not a team that runs a bunch of motion, runs a bunch of stacks. Like, that's not the good news, quote unquote, is that they don't do that stuff a ton that has given Washington problems. The bad news is it's not that hard to install. They definitely can. And they have such firepower that you might not even need it, considering just, hey, let's get some man-to-man looks and let's roll. And then defensively, I just don't know that Washington has been potent enough offensively that I think they can fully take advantage of a Cincinnati defense that is, I don't want to say ripe for the picking, because it's not like Kansas City crushed them last week, but certainly some opportunities could exist, and I don't know that Washington is ready to take advantage of those yet. So I'm going to take Cincinnati tonight. I do think it's close enough. Washington probably covers the 7, but Anthony, I will take Cincinnati straight up for the win.
Yeah, I'm going with Cincinnati as well. I was trying to talk myself into picking the Commanders, and I just didn't want to do what I did against the Bucks, where I talked myself into it. So I'm going to stick with my guns. I'm going with the Bengals to win, maybe like 30-24, something like that.
Yeah. I really hope that defensively they just play better tonight. I don't want another week of, hey, do they have any clue what they're doing over there? That would be nice. What was I gonna ask? Oh, so far we're both 2-0 on the year picking Commanders games. You're 1-1?
Yeah, you're 2-0. You picked the Bucks week one, then we both picked the Commanders last week. And
here's
now we
being,
have
here's to being 2-1. Here's to me being 2-1, to the Commanders being 2-1. And then, I don't know, Michael earlier this week said he thinks the Cardinals are very beatable. So, I don't know.
Uh-oh.
This is where you start getting ahead of yourself a little bit. But
I'm wrong, though.
I think the Bengals are beatable. I'm not predicting the Commanders will beat them. So it's not a no chance game. That's for sure. All right, we'll wrap up some final thoughts. And get you out of here. A couple of good real things from the weekend as well. And then we hand you off to Denton and Linnell coming up at 7 o'clock here on the Team 980. As well on the free Odyssey app. You get a half hour here on the Team 980 of Denton and Linnell coming up at the top of the hour. Burgundy and Gold game day pregame. They'll be on the Fan for the in-game show as well. And then we have the Monday Night Football game that's not the Commanders game, Jags-Bills, coming up at 7:30, courtesy of Westwood One. The inactives just came out, Anthony, and I actually kind of wish we could eavesdrop on Linnell right now, because he was losing his mind last week on the Derek Forrest thing. And Defoe inactive again tonight. This is not a surprise. Like, this, literally, no one on the beat, no one who covers the team would have expected Derek Forrest to be inactive. Or not being active tonight. And I don't know why it's fully become a thing, other than he's a name that fans know and are familiar with. But Emmanuel Forbes officially out. Dan Quinn had said it was much more likely that Forbes would be back for week four. So he is there in Cincy, but ultimately not going. Sam Hartman, of course, the third quarterback, with Marcus Mariota remaining on IR. Forrest. Dominique Hampton remains inactive, as is Chris Paul, and then we knew Cleveland Furl was ruled out. The one guy that has gone from active to inactive is Colson Yankoff, the rookie undrafted free agent tight end out of UCLA. He played special teams the first couple of weeks, and instead you have more depth on the defensive line. So not only will they have five defensive tackles up to make sure that they have some depth behind Johnny Newton as he continues to work his way into a full snap count. But they also have Andre Jones Jr. and Jamin Davis active. Jones Jr. was activated off the practice squad earlier today. And so he is going to be the fourth or fifth defensive end. I wonder if that's a situational thing. Also, he's been a decent special teams player, and Jamin has less experience playing special teams. So, however they're going to work, you know, Javonte Jean-Baptiste, Jamin Davis, Andre Jones Jr., that rotation, in terms of both edge and special teams, that is something to track tonight, based off the inactive list. But, that is your inactive list tonight. Real quickly, just another update from around the NFL. It sounds like whoever Adam Schefter's sources are in San Francisco, he just got off the phone with them. Schefter reporting just moments ago, one, 49ers quarterback Brock Purdy has back soreness and will be considered day-to-day. So they're already out Kittle, they're already out Debo, they're already out McCaffrey. Trent Williams got banged up in the game but came back, and now Brock Purdy, who's been just unbelievable, like MVP caliber good this year. Purdy has back soreness and will be considered day-to-day. And on top of that, 49ers defensive tackle Javon Hargrave suffered a partial triceps tear Sunday, likely out for the rest of the season. And more San Francisco news from Schefter. Christian McCaffrey is apparently going to Germany to see a specialist. So things are great in San Francisco, Anthony.
Oh, my gosh. You talk about, you know, the rich getting richer. What do you call the adverse effect?
Kyle Shanahan's really going to get tested.
Okay.
Yeah. McCaffrey's got the calf thing. He's going to Germany to get it checked out.
Oh, my gosh. Injuries, man. They're part of the game, but when they hit you like this, it's just like,
that's why predicting things is stupid.
Yeah.
Like, it can all change like that. The best teams in the league become not that formidable. It's wild. Dogs this weekend, they were like nine. I think underdogs this weekend were like 9-3 against the spread, and like 4, 5, 6, 7 of them won outright or something like that. And like the four biggest, I think it was the four biggest underdogs of the weekend all won outright.
Yeah, that's
of course, insane. Washington would love to continue that tonight. Bananas. Do we have any final thoughts, or do we want to hit real things? Do we have any real things? I know you're dealing with chaos right now, Anthony.
Yeah, I had to put the real things imager over here because this screen for some reason keeps going off. But we have something from last week that we didn't get to. It's the Jim Nantz, and I hope we get to it.
Okay, let's do that, because the Jim Nantz thing is great, and it's a great setup to get your mind right for a game. All right, so we all watched Jim Nantz and Tony Romo call football games. Tonight we get Joe Buck, Troy Aikman, Lisa Salters, and the Monday Night Gang. We've all seen Nantz call it, and we've all seen him call golf. We've seen him call the Final Four for years until this year when he finally stepped down from that and I and Eagle took over. But Nantz just, like, he has this, like, aura about him. He just floats up here. And yet, the one thing that Jim Nantz must do on a game day is the most human thing that you will ever hear.
things that you absolutely need when you're calling a game?
I need a hot dog
at halftime.
I don't eat hot dogs any other time of the year. I'll go three quarters of the way through and I'll throw the rest out and go call the second half.
We need ketchup.
The crew brings in ketchup because they know we're a couple of guys that are likely to make a mess. So, and we're not being divas either. Like, bring us our ketchup. We got to travel our ketchup. Where is it this week?
We used to sing a lot. Maybe I was hurting my voice from time to time.
We ought to bring it back.
I think it's time to bring it back.
We had these little speakers, and it was always
Red Hill Mining Town.
Red Hill Mining Town, and he would have to hit certain notes. And the truck is going crazy because they're saying 10 seconds to air. He's still screeching out the last notes. 5 seconds to air, and all of a sudden, hello, friends. Jim Nantz, Tony Romo.
He's not kidding.
What about drinks?
Water, Gatorade, and I probably have a Coke or a Pepsi when I'm there.
One thing on Gatorade. Do you call them by flavor or by color?
Oh, color. Yeah, I've never thought of it by flavor.
I think that's the correct answer, Anthony. Is Gatorades don't have flavors. They have no one calls it like Blue Ice. It's just blue or whatever. The blue. I don't even know Blue Ice is the flavor.
I think it's Glacier Freeze or something like that. I
can't
tell you. I can. But yeah, I'm blue.
That's orange, why orange red. Is the best because yeah. Then it's just orange. Orange is orange.
Yeah, I love orange.
So I wish we don't have time for me to explain. I have a funny bit that I'm going to tell you off the air, and then we can try to bring it back on the air tomorrow. I just don't have time to explain it right now. But here's what you need to know. The show's over in 10 seconds, and Jim Nantz has a hot dog at every halftime, and I think that's awesome. Monday Night Football, we'll talk about it tomorrow. Enjoy the game, everybody.
The Team 980.